A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters, May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from just outside of New York City, from an apartment in Brooklyn, New York. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
How are you, Andrew? How are you feeling?
Feeling great. Feeling ready to start the week.
That's right. How was your weekend?
Very fun.
Was it?
Yeah.
You had a birthday?
Yeah.
You had a drink?
Sure.
You got hungover?
Sure did.
Yeah. All right.
You were there.
I was there. It was nice, but its execution was weird.
What does that mean?
It's like you didn't really want to have it.
No, I didn't.
Or have anyone there.
Yeah, that's pretty much true. I did not invite anybody.
Nobody.
Now, there were... Like, friends of mine wound up, obviously, were there. Amanda invited people that we're friends with.
But you pretty much told her don't invite anyone, but also invite somebody.
I have... So you were there, obviously. I mean, look, you and I... history is well-documented. That's how I describe my friendships. I have well-documented histories with certain people.
That's a person that I've known.
No, but you were supposed, you and Darcy and the baby were supposed to come over and stay over not long ago. We had to reschedule. Yep. So in part of the rescheduling, it was just like, oh, well, why don't you just come to this thing?
Right. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been invited.
Right. Because no one was.
So
except two of my friends that I've known since I was 5 years old, who I grew up next door to in Philadelphia. They also now live up in New York. So like it was mentioned to them. But yeah,
I was at a birthday party by accident, basically. You're a weird man.
I'm a weird man. A therapist could really dive into this specific thing where it's not that I'm against parties. I love going to parties. I look forward to them all week. They're fun. They're awesome. Especially as you get older and there are just inherently fewer of them. It's something I really look forward to. I'm not against going out and partying. I'm against it when it's for me, because for some reason, like I said, therapists out there who listen to this show, dive into this. Help me understand why I am this way. My gut instinct when an invite is being sent out to people for something based around me is that the invite is being received with eye rolls, that it's being received as some sort of burden. I'm not joking. You're laughing right now, but I'm being serious. This is how my head works. Being received as some sort of, you know, oh, great, now I got to figure out a babysitter. Like, oh, great, now I got to, like, we got to get an Uber to go 30 minutes, or I got to take the train. Like, I think of all the reasons why people wouldn't want to be there. I know that that's probably not true, because I know how I am when I get invited to somebody else's party. My instinct is that's going to be fun and I'm excited about it. But for some reason, when it's for me, that's where my head goes. So I'm sure that smart people out there who have therapy backgrounds can help explain what that is and how I can I want to overcome that.
I'd invite
my 50th birthday. It's going to be a totally different story. But for now, that's how I am. It's weird. I wish it wasn't like that.
I'm going to invite, because we've got a broad range of people that listen to the podcast. So there's bound to be someone in the area of mental health or something like that, that will have some kind of reasoning behind this. Yeah. caughtoffsidepod@gmail.com.
Oh, wow. You're really,
let's help Andrew.
This.
But listen, I'm the exact opposite to that. I tell Darcy I don't want anyone to go, but I'd be devastated if there was no one there. If there's a way of throwing a party for myself, I'll do it. And I'm like, I'm much more outgoing than you. However, I did really like how we finished the evening. We had a few beers.
So it should be said that you stayed over.
I stayed in your basement.
Yeah.
Which very nice, very, very nice. Bed in the basement, that basement room that you created, loved it, had a great sleep, in fact slept too long if anything. Yeah. But I treated you to so many nights out over the past 15 years in that I don't go to bed when I go home. What I do is I sit down, I take my phone out, and I stream or not stream, I cast from my phone to the TV whatever is in my brain. Sometimes it might be comedy, but most of the time it's classic football matches. Mm-hmm. So over a bourbon, we relived the Bale Inter Milan games.
Yeah.
What else do we do? Yugoslavia Spain from Euro 2000 for some reason.
Yeah.
What else? There was a couple other ones.
It was late and I was done at that point.
You were done, but I would not let you go to bed.
No, it was wonderful though. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it turned out to be, but I mean, you designed
despite my best efforts.
Quite incredible. Whereas you said to me when I had a party for my citizenship, you came up to me and you said, "I can't wait to find out the next way you'll come up with to celebrate yourself."
Right. We are. I guess that's why this all works, because we are so similar in many ways, but we're really different in just enough that it's why this works. Despite my best efforts, again, this podcast, I think, will be a pretty enjoyable one. There's a lot to get to. Some thoughts on the Premier League title race is that, I mean, it's winding down. It's getting pretty close to the end now. So we'll talk about that. You, like I said, you stayed over, and it was fitting that you did so. Because we were able to take in most of the Caught Offside Cup together.
Yeah. It's
not a thing that has, other than the Champions League final, that I don't believe that's ever happened.
No, we've watched games together before, but not necessarily Caught Offside Cup.
Had there been more juice to this one, I don't know that I would have wanted to, but it just...
No, you were quite happy for me.
And it's build up.
You were quite happy for me to be there because, as we both kind of noted, it didn't feel like it had any real significance.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that. We'll break that one down. A couple clubs around Europe have been crowned champions in the last few days, so we'll pay homage to them. And then JJ, back by popular demand, a segment we had done once before called Only Nice Things. We're going to bring
deranged.
It back. We're,
it's deranged.
It's a bit deranged. It is a bit deranged. But we're going to bring that back. We've got some Only Nice Things to say about a couple, a person and club. I don't know what yours are.
A group of people in one, and then a person and a habit.
I'm intrigued.
Yep.
And then we'll close out with, I mean, Lionel Messi, this experience is, it's something. The Messi experience has been what we had hoped, I think, it was going to be.
I think there's a bunch of players in this league who are will be quite happy to see the back of this guy. And and whose ritual humiliation is now a weekly event.
It's really something. And then I know Manchester United play today. Sometimes I'm weary of breaking down a team when I know by the time people are listening to this podcast, some narratives will have changed. But there are enough things that will not have changed even after United play Crystal Palace this afternoon that pertain to United that I do also want to mention before this podcast ends. Just some things, some comments that have been made over the last 48 hours or so that are interesting to me that I think warrant mentioning, even though we're recording this before United's match against Palace. There are things that won't change despite what happens there. So let's dive into the title race. It remains unchanged. It remains unchanged. All three clubs.
You'll be saying that for the next 2 weekends.
It's possible. It's certainly possible. Arsenal, let's start with them. They take care of business against one of the more informed sides in the Premier League mid-table, Bournemouth. 3-0. Bournemouth didn't look very informed on this day. You know, it's interesting. Some of the observations that I have with Arsenal, you can't help seeing them in this position again this year after having been in this position last year. You can't help but compare the two things. At least I can't. And, you know, like this is a game where I feel like if this happened last year, like you look at this, this is your quintessential trap game in certain ways. It's sandwiched between a North London derby and an upcoming match against Manchester United, and it's against Bournemouth, who have been very good, but a mid-table side that don't necessarily get you all juiced up. So that's like trap game material. And for Arsenal right now, none of that stuff matters. They're not fazed by certain passages of play or certain matches that they take more seriously than others as maybe what you saw from them last year. It looks like to me this is a team that has learned from what happened last year. They ran out of gas in the title race a year ago, lost their discipline, showed they weren't ready for the moment. JJ, the 2-2 draw with Liverpool, the 2-2 West Ham, the 3-3 ridiculous Southampton game. Their 9 games last year to end the season, they won 3, drew 3, and lost 3. They weren't ready. They weren't ready last year, and they threw it away. You are seeing none of that from Arsenal this season. They've won 4 straight at this point when the importance of these matches have ratcheted up. They've only conceded 2 goals in that stretch, and they were the 2 against Tottenham when they were up 3-0. They let their guard down. Raya made a mistake, and then there was a penalty. So in these 4 games, they've conceded 1 goal from open play. From January 1st to today, they've scored 52 goals and allowed 10. No one else is doing that. City aren't doing that. Saliba's healthy. The addition of Rice, an overall maturing of the squad, of the manager. It feels like they are built for this in a way that they were not last year. And most importantly, I don't know what's going to happen. I still think if I had to make a prediction, I still think Manchester City will find a way to win this thing. Mm. But the biggest difference is last year, you know, bottle it, say whatever you want. It felt like Arsenal gave Manchester City the trophy. And this year, I don't think that's going to happen. If City are going to go on and do this, it will not be because anybody handed anything to them. They will have to have earned it. And I think Arsenal, you can at least say that about what Arsenal have done in the latter part of this season.
Yeah, I think they're a much more ruthless outfit. They're a much more domineering outfit than they were last season. That stretch you talked about last season just ruined it for them. And also the shellackings they took from City meant that they weren't really like. They were so much better than they had been for the previous, 10 years, and they were in a serious title challenge, and it did fall apart. But yeah, I don't feel the same way I do about them this season. Like, I think they've developed a lot. They'd be worthy champions for me. If we were in a scenario where you could lose a game, you know, but mid-90s title challenges where you could lose a game down the stretch and still be champion, then this team would be champions. But we're not in that era now. We're not. And it's unfortunate. And for all Arsenal have done this season, it's a shame that the title is going to be won, I would say, in a procession by City. Unless something can happen in the next while, which I don't feel it in my water. It is a shame because,
well, again, I think you speak Arsenal for yourself here. Not everyone is rooting for Arsenal.
I know.
Only half of this podcast is.
But... Wow, I'm very much rooting for them. They're a different.
By the way,
side.
Liverpool are still in it. We'll get to that.
This delusion that you're operating under. It's almost as if you've sat in with the two Robbies and Rebecca at the production meeting and Tim Howard. And you're there, Andrew, and the executive at the top of the desk is like, now, we know it's all over, but enthusiasm, guys, I want to see smiles. I want to see people punching home the key points. Wow, this thing is going to go down to the wire. The second key point, can you believe how close this race is at this point? Blah, blah, blah. All this stuff. It's like you've been indoctrinated into
The race is close.
Whereas everybody else just can't feel it because of one weekend where Liverpool and Arsenal slipped up, and that was it. The minute that weekend finished, I started casting my eye to other things because I've seen this story, Andrew. I would be delighted to be surprised. I would be delighted to be wrong, but like you can't go down this road so many times. And I actually do feel for Arsenal, because, like I said, any other season they'd be worthy champions. But we're not in that football universe that existed in the 90s. We're not there anymore. And now, look, United were the dominant team in the 90s as well, and for a lot of us, they won it again. But it wasn't
so.
It didn't feel as guaranteed as it is right now. Although
I'm glad you're saying this. I was going to save this for when we talked about the Manchester City game, but you've walked us right into the middle of it. I'm not saying you're wrong. I also do feel that there is this sense of inevitability, word that we use all year long, this whole era long since Pep got to City, this feeling that has existed around Manchester City. So it's not that you're wrong, but I need a little bit, and a lot of this I remember. I mean, I've been a Premier League fan long enough, but I some of your perspective on this, and honest, I know we can get in the honesty tree here and admit that you have certain feelings about Manchester City that I do think shade some of your opinions of them, the way that they were built and money.
Those are things that happened in the past 15 years.
Right. But I'm saying, I think that we can acknowledge that they sometimes shade your enthusiasm around that club, despite the fact that City do play great football and are fun to watch. But
are they fun to watch?
Yeah, they're fun to watch. Yes. They score great goals. They're loaded with some of the best players in the world. Okay. They are objectively fun to watch. Mm-hmm. But give us a little bit of a history lesson here. Help me understand the difference in terms of inevitability between what we're seeing now with City and Fergie's United. They went from the 92-93 season to the 12-13 season. That's 21 seasons. They won the league 13 times.
Mm.
There's that. Or even Chelsea after that. Chelsea had a six-season stretch where they averaged 87 points per season. And in the Pep era, let's assume that City win their final three games and they'll finish with 91 points this year. That means in the Pep era, City will finish with 89.5 points per season. Pretty much the same as a six-year run from Chelsea, with the exception of one game per season.
Mm.
So help me understand objectively the differences of inevitability between a 21-year stretch where United won the league 13 times, a six-year stretch where Chelsea averaged almost the same number of points per season as City. Why is this so much different than what we've seen for kind of the last 30 years of football in the sport?
Yeah, I mean, you can say that there's been a hierarchy of clubs that can win the Premier League, and it's been a small shop. We had the petrodollars of Roman Abramovich. They funded Chelsea. Nobody said that was a good thing, and we found out later on how bad it was. And then there was Manchester United, who for the longest time were the biggest financial shark in the Premier League. See, a declining Liverpool couldn't compete with them. There's always been, you can say, financial irregularities, but there was the sense that, Blackburn, who in their own way were superpowered by Jack Walker's money, but Blackburn came in and interrupted that. And then
Leicester.
Arsenal. But Leicester predate, Andrew, the utter dominance of the Pep era.
Predate Pep, but they don't predate Manchester City.
But they predate
financial
City's
power.
Yeah, but City weren't at their optimum then. City were building towards having Pep, and then they got him, and then that's it. That was the final piece of the jigsaw in terms of their utter dominance. You felt that United could lose games. You felt that there was a chance every season that someone could take them on and beat them. You didn't feel as if you didn't feel as if the money was coming from a nefarious source, from a source that was, you didn't think that United were massive because of their history and because of the revenues they could bring in from sponsorship. You never felt it was like they had to make up sponsors.
But that's not why, that has nothing to do with the inevitability. That just has to do with us not liking how they were built.
But like if you look at the way Arsenal came in then, so you had that stretch. Well, first of all, Andrew, like right at the start of the Premier League, the season beforehand, you had Leeds United. Leeds United pipped United to it. This was supposed to be United breaking that long, long stretch without a first division championship. Leeds did it. The next season, it was a head-to-head race with Aston Villa. Right? Ron Atkinson's Aston Villa. So United go on to win the next two, and then Blackburn Rovers come in and they compete with them. Then Liverpool starts to resurge a little bit towards the end of the 90s, and then you have Arsene Wenger. So Arsene Wenger comes into Arsenal and completely overhauls that club, and you see then this back and forth between United and Arsenal for the next few seasons. You know, like, United's dominance was there. There was no question. And it was driven by Sir Alex Ferguson, by the... I mean, it was underpinned by youth players and the players they brought through the ranks. Paul Scholes, David Beckham, Ryan Giggs.
That's us liking more of how it was built, not necessarily the inevitability of the moment. They're two different things.
But I didn't feel it. Well, it never felt inevitable all the time. They were the best team in England, sure, but it never felt inevitable.
This, I think we're just a little
you
more...
Look at the win percentages, Andrew. Look at the way... Just look at the way City eviscerate the league. There's no jeopardy within games. That game against Wolves, most people turned it off. Whereas with United, there was. They could lose three or four. It could happen. There was a sense that they could lose. That's just not there with City at all. They don't lose. They lose. They win the vast majority of the games. That's
That is absolutely true. Yeah. I'm just saying I think that has also been true of a few clubs for a long time now at different stretches of the Premier League's recent history. And like, again, some of what you
say
about...
I mean, if you want to say the way it's built and the way it's being done is absolutely key. Of course it is.
I think that, I mean, honestly, I think that's the main part of it here, is that this has existed. We just don't, we don't like the form in which it's taken that, or how this one was built.
Like, take 94, 95. So they lose on the final day. United can only draw at West Ham, and Blackburn lose at Liverpool, but it's not enough for United to overhaul them. Blackburn are champions. Then you go into 95, 96, and United completely overhaul their squad, and they start the season. They get rid of three key players: Mark Hughes, Paul Ince, Andrei Kanchelskis, all leave the club. And there's a sense, oh God, what are they doing? And they go out and they get beaten, I think, 3-0 by Aston Villa on the opening day. And Alan Hansen on the BBC goes, you can't win anything with kids. And there was this sense, well, United are in trouble here. They go on and they win the title. Now, they win the title. Where do they win the title from, Andrew? They win it coming from 12 points behind Newcastle at one point. Do you know what I mean? That's jeopardy, man. That's
right,
There's no jeopardy in this.
That's not true. I just disagree with that. I think in 30 years, like the way we're looking back on the last 30 years from now, JJ Jr. and Andrew Jr. are going to be sitting here and they'll be able to look at it and say, like the way you say Arsenal then came, they emerged and pushed United. Well, I mean, it's not, City have not done this unchallenged. They've had multiple title races that went down to the final day. Liverpool
They've had
pushed
one
them to the
club.
You know, you said United coming back from 12 points back. What was Arsenal's lead over City last year? It took Arsenal suffering a major collapse at the end of the season for City to rush in and
but,
do
but
it.
But it's because
but they have not been unchallenged.
But that was inevitable. That run City went on was inevitable. They'd done it three, four times beforehand. Like three seasons in. Like we seen it with Liverpool as well. Liverpool would go and, I think it was 18-19, was it? Drew a Merseyside derby. And that was it. I knew from then they can't win it. There's no way they'll win it. City would go off and what, they ripped 14 on... unanswered 14 wins to the end of the season. It's this kind of steamrolling, Andrew, that is absolutely inevitable. A case is compelling, man. It's very compelling. I know there's a wish for the stuff we're watching to have more meaning and to be fairer and to be something we can look back on. But like this right now is, I don't think for a second that they're not going to win the league. The minute that even before, what did I say? I think I said it in February when you chastised me. You said, you asked me, Liverpool had just had a significant win. You said, you think they'll win the title now. And I said, no. And then you said, well, you're just mushing yourself. You're hoping against hope. You know,
right,
you're
which was true.
Comfort yourself.
That is what you were doing.
But there's also the analytic part of me that looked at both sides. And I did say this on the podcast. I said, who's most likely to drop points of the three? And it's Liverpool and Arsenal. And that's exactly what happened.
Well,
that's inevitability.
It hasn't happened with Arsenal yet.
They dropped points. Of course they did. They lost at home to Aston Villa.
All right. So they,
that's the point. I mean, that was the weekend I referred to.
But I'm saying since January 1st, they're top of the Premier League table. That's half the season now where they've been probably the best team in the league.
And in an ordinary league on a level playing field, I could tell you that they would be worthy champions, but it's not gonna happen.
What I'll say is I think for
You nothing I've said has swayed you.
No. That's not, by the way, it's not that I disagree. I do agree with large chunks of what you're saying. The two things are, I think, like I said, I think you allow a lot of your legitimate feelings and skepticism about the way City were formed to kind of invade your overall feeling on these title races. It's hurt it for you. I think that for whatever you think I'm doing in overblowing the title race.
Oh, yeah.
I think you are doing the same thing on the other side and saying that there isn't one. I think the truth is probably somewhere in between whatever the two of us feel about it.
Possibly. But I know I'm going to be sat somewhere in Liverpool drinking a pint at the end of the season on May 19th, and City will be champs.
Real quick, we were discussing the Arsenal game. The only other things I wanted to say
I took you off on that.
No. But that's probably more interesting than whatever else we're going to say about it. The two big things. When I talk about the differences too between Arsenal last year, this year, we all knew that this was a huge part of Arsenal's step forward. But like the Declan Rice acquisition, I think you're really seeing it pay dividends now in the way that not only is he playing really well, and I think he was man of the match from this game. He was excellent. But there was a story that emerged after this one where Arsenal went into the locker room at halftime up 1-0. They had just scored. And Declan Rice was furious, and he was furious with himself because he believed that he had missed some clear-cut chances that he could have taken. And I think having a player of his caliber, a leader like that guy, who's still like, we're up, we just scored, but that's not good enough. I think having that is maybe something that is a little bit different than whatever they had in that locker room last year.
I think his general play, I'm always wary. Like there's some guys and I can say, yeah, that's leadership there. I'm always wary attributing those things. I think it's just his general play has been so good. And he's been a massive, particularly, I mean, they haven't had parity for the majority of the season. They lost a veteran to Granit Xhaka. So he's come in and he's been brilliant, Andrew. Yeah, I agree.
Only other thing about this one, the penalty that started all this for Arsenal that led to their first goal, the Kai Havertz penalty decision. It's a big moment in the game. They get that goal right as halftime is approaching.
So someone tweeted us, an Arsenal fan immediately tweeted us, I just hope when you talk about the Arsenal penalty against Bournemouth, like as it's happening, please keep in mind, not all Arsenal fans thought it was a penalty.
Okay.
He goes,
I hope
they go on and score goals. Right, which is fair.
That's good to know, because that's not what I had in my head.
An email right before we recorded from Josh Turner. Just want to say that you guys really don't need to do the long discussion on was it a penalty or not for the Arsenal match or really any others. We get that everywhere, and I've always liked that your pod didn't really go down that useless rabbit hole. But you have done more of it lately, which I'm hoping you can nip in the bud. It's true. It is truly the least interesting bit of analysis in the coverage of soccer. I kind of agree with you, Josh, but I'm not taking a was it a penalty, was it not. I'm taking more of a global view of that kind of penalty. Like it's not
dragging your foot,
doing it like that. Like Mark Travers is not colliding with Kai Havertz if Kai Havertz is not dragging his leg in that fashion. I mean, it's deliberate.
Havertz is the one making an abnormal body movement to ensure contact. To me, that's
100%.
They get away with it a lot this year, but I think it's something that like the PGMOL should take a closer look at this summer.
Definitely, and I don't think we need to say any more about it.
No, yeah, I would agree. But yeah, 3-0, huge win for Arsenal. And of course, part of the reason it was so huge is because Manchester City did their job as well. They destroy Wolves 5-1. And the JJ, the Premier League's best League One striker, now has 7 goals in his last 4 games.
He's up to Championship level. So I will admit, I saw it was 3-0 at halftime, and I didn't look at it. I didn't watch it.
They scored more.
They did score more. I can't, like, it's Wolves are what do we say? Wolves are on the beach now, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
And
you get these end of, I really think I need another project for somebody out there to tell me if there is real statistical proof that you have more goals, more blowouts in the last like 6 weeks of a season as opposed to any of like the preceding 32 weeks. I just think that you're more prone to these things.
I do think it's part of the city industrial complex that they'll do this to a team like that. Like a team that's probably been pushed to its limit. Like, I don't want to disparage Wolves because I think Wolves have had a great season considering what we thought they might be at the start of it. Mm-hmm. Gary O'Neill has done a great job. But yeah, they're out of gas and they're meeting a team that's in its full stride. And yeah, that's not good.
Yeah. Haaland had 4 in this one. The assist from Phil Foden for, I forget which one it was for Haaland, but oh my God, it's just like a 40-yard ball on a dime. And Haaland, I mean, he's also amazing, and his first touch is perfect. His finish is perfect. Like, it takes 2.
Good goal.
But the Foden pass is just, it was excellent. But once again, it's one of these situations where it's something off the field that maybe mars, like, kind of like that Chelsea penalty situation a few weeks ago. We're like, yeah, great win, but like, no one's really talking about that.
No.
A lot of people talking about Haaland when he was substituted off, and yeah, he threw a bit of a temper tantrum. Here, JJ, is what all of a sudden what Erling Haaland's harshest critic Roy Keane had to say about it.
We saw Haaland yesterday being brought off, not too happy, behaving like a spoiled brat, but because they win the game, he scores goals, it's almost forgotten about. But I think because the results haven't been going Liverpool's way, that's highlighted. But you'd fully expect Liverpool to turn up here today, put in a good performance, and let the manager leave over the next few weeks on a high.
Spoiled brat, that's all right if you score 4 goals, isn't it?
No, not really. No, because what? No, it's not.
All right. Might pick up on that a little later on.
No problem.
Yeah, what do you make of this?
Okay, so it's Keane being Keane. It's also Keane, his unique ability to bring grudges from his playing career forward, not just to the afterworld or the afterlife of non-playing, but also towards the progeny of those that have aggrieved him in the past, mm-hmm. which it's utterly spectacular. So I take this with a pinch of salt. I honestly don't believe you think. Keane is self-aware. Keane knows he is box office. Like, Sky cannot afford to lose him. He's so good. He's added a new dimension of bluntness and straightness and comic timing with Neville and Carragher. I don't believe he thinks Haaland is a spoiled brat at all.
He acted like one. He doesn't say necessarily
acted. I mean, you can say that easy. I'm sure that is something Keane wouldn't love if he was a manager and a player is like openly hostile or openly tantrum-y.
I think Roy Keane is right in this situation.
You do.
In this situation.
Yeah.
I love Haaland. The fact that Haaland needs defending is hilarious to me, but I have been one of his defenders. But in this situation, you've got 4 goals. Like, the game is, you've won the game. I think it was the 81st minute when this substitution is happening. Like, just go off the field, man. Just, like, you don't need to carry on with these histrionics. Like, you scored 4 times. Like, yeah. I mean, the game's over. You've got a greater purpose the rest of the season than just piling more goals on hapless Wolves. Like, yeah, don't get hurt in these last 10 minutes when maybe Wolves are frustrated and somebody is going to take a run at you for, you've been showing them up. You scored 4 goals. Like, someone might get mad and go for it's not worth it. So, like, I don't know, carrying on like that, like, what's the point? Why?
I agree with you. I think it might be part performative. You know, he was, prior to the Nottingham Forest game, he had, you know, a little bit of a bald patch of form, and he'd been out of the side a little bit, and you know, maybe this is just like, look at what I, you know, when you're taking off of four goals, look at what I've done. Look at, you know, like kind of drawing attention to himself a little bit. But I do think driving the comments is Roy Keane's grudge against his father for the injury he inflicted, ACL, and then for the tackle and the court case and everything that went with that during his playing career.
That's also not okay. If he's supposed, I mean, I know he's not like, he's not a reporter, Roy Keane. He's an opinion shaper. He's a, you know, he editorial, like it's not, he's not reporting news. He's supposed to give his subjective opinions on it. But like, if he's allowing that to color the way he views this guy's career, then like, that's also not okay.
But he's done it before. So remember he took Ronaldo's side vociferously. When there was all these calls for Ronaldo to be dropped under at the start of the Ten Hag era, that he was a problem, et cetera, et cetera. And on the sideline for a game, the whole Sky crew were there. And Ronaldo blanked Neville and Carragher and then had a big hug with Roy Keane. Don't forget that Keane and Ronaldo's careers overlap. He had young Ronaldo at United and he defended him. He defended him when I thought there was no... Remember when he at Chelsea, remember he was substituted or he wasn't going to come on and he walked off down the tunnel and left the ground. Remember Ronaldo did that?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Keane defended that. Something he would... like you're talking about being a brat.
Right.
Something he would never defend as a manager, but he did because Ronaldo has had his corner before. There's a... If people want to go on, it's got millions of hits. He did a roadshow before COVID in 2019. It's about an hour long. It talks about his career for both Man United and Ireland. It's an airing of the grievances in spectacular fashion. Oh. He literally goes through everyone and takes them down. Hate is a powerful motivator. A powerful motivator. And a lot of Keane's career, I'm convinced, has been driven by that. And why wouldn't his commentary? Why wouldn't his analysis?
Yeah. Now, I should say about Haaland, I have not read or seen. My assumption is that his outburst was based on being taken off. If there was something else that happened, if he was mad at someone for something, like I understand the emotion of that maybe leading to him kind of like venting in that moment. But if it was simply because he just didn't want to be substituted, then yeah, I think I kind of, in this situation, I agree with Roy Keane.
Jan Aga Fjortoft, who is close to Team Haaland, he tweeted that something to the effect that it was the comments were put to Erling Haaland, and he just said, "I don't think anything about this man." Here it is. Erling told us yesterday, "I don't care about that man."
So he was told that Roy Keane referred to him as a spoiled brat.
I'm assuming.
Is that what you're? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Feels like there is something personal here.
I mean, it's funny. It's like Keane has never been more in contact with Haaland since they retired because he's at every game working for Sky.
Yeah.
And Haaland's at every game as well. And I wonder, will there ever be, like with these comments, you know, he's a champ, he's a League Two striker. Was it League One or League Two?
League One, right?
Yeah, he elevated him to Championship then. Like, I wonder, is there a flashpoint coming?
Yeah, I don't know. But it's interesting. It is interesting.
Yeah.
And then finally, JJ, want to hear as we talk about the Premier League title race, we will mention, of course, the Caught Offside Cup, Liverpool. They remain mathematically in the title race, and you, more importantly, recapture the Caught Offside Cup in emphatic fashion.
Yeah.
4-2, and it wasn't,
but it was 4-0.
It was 4-0. First, the Liverpool side of this, another player who may have exhibited spoiled brat tendencies in recent weeks, Mo Salah. I don't know if he was in need of some kind of like redemption performance.
No.
But if he was, he got it. He was so good in this game, especially in the first half, especially in the first 20 minutes when he had...
How did he miss that one in the second half? Where he's just stabbing at it. It's just like,
oh, yeah. Weird, no, bro. That was a strange miss.
He was too blasé. He tried to flick it and it just didn't.
Yeah. Happen. Probably was an easier way to hit that than the way he tried. It. But I mean, in the first few minutes he hit the crossbar. Then he comes back down again, forces a great save out of Vicario. And then eventually he does score on a nice, really nice ball from Gakpo that Salah heads home. He was great in this game. Liverpool, it felt, I mean, you and I, like I said, we watched most of this one together.
It felt too easy, Andrew.
Tottenham, they do this. They fall into these games where they don't concede goals every time a team goes on the attack, but they get close. Like, they go through these stretches where it feels like there are no blasé attacks against them. It feels like it's just this onrush of serious goal-scoring opportunities that just keep coming. And Tottenham have such a hard time stemming the tide. They almost did in this game. They almost got to the locker room down just a goal. Not saying it would have mattered. I think they were always losing this one. But if they could have done that, yeah, I think that would have been important for them to have just said, okay, we bore the brunt of that and we're just down one. We're in this. When they allowed that second one for Robertson, again, just looked so easy. All of these attacks, the midfield is just shredded for Tottenham. Teams are going right through them. We'll get to the Tottenham part of it, but I'll at least say Liverpool, who hadn't been playing well, they looked good. They looked really good in this game.
They did, and I do think that part of that was how generous Tottenham were. Look, it's Liverpool perspective. I mean, if you're a supporter, you're trying for this. You're hoping and praying and willing that this thing just doesn't go flat, right? You want to send Klopp out on the right note. You realize that the league is gone, but that you just want to really send him off with something that's fitting. And so from that point of view, a win is good. But I it's so hard to take anything from this game. So hard. Four goals at home. Great. Fantastic. Gakpo header was really good. The Harvey Elliott goal was brilliant. Although I have to say the passivity of Spurs defending, I mean, Bentancur goes to close down. Okay, fine. But then once that happens, once he skips past Bentancur, there's like just silhouettes of straw men.
Everyone is just so open.
Open and standing. Yeah. And I felt bad for Vicario because it was, bent into the top corner. And what was he supposed to do about it? I'd happily take the win. I've just now, I'm really, I'm beginning to go into this reflective mode now about the past 9-10 years. That's where I'm clicking into right now. I'm starting to think about everything and the end. Yeah, I am. And the future as well. We watched it together as we had breakfast, and so many times I would say to you, look, I'm not convinced by Gakpo. Robertson's getting on. Endo has been fine, but is, at 32, 33, is he going to be, he's not a long-term solution in the middle of the park. And
no, he's not one of the names that I immediately think of. And then who's going to lead this transition?
But there's a transition within the transition, I think. Like, there's Darwin.
Well, Van Dijk says he wants to be a part of it.
Well, I get that's a good thing to hear as well. But you're like, does Trent stay out as a fullback? Does he go into midfield? If so, does Bradley become the first choice fullback? The forward line, Mo Salah. There's so many questions, and that's what I'm starting to think about. Anyway,
the Tottenham side of it. So, look,
someone tweeted, "Is Andrew going to do his reprise his famous rant from this time last year?"
No, this isn't. I mean, that was what happened last year was uniquely ugly. Now, in some ways, this is too. They've lost four in a row for the first time in nearly 20 years. So this has also reached depths that Tottenham don't often frequent. This end of the season has been a disaster for the team and for the manager. This happens, we kind of look what we're saying about Wolves before, but I think Tottenham, it's magnified because of where they are on the table, just the general interest maybe around them. We've reached this needs to end now stretch of the season for Tottenham, because with each passing week, the only things that are happening is that belief in the manager is dropping and confidence over some of these players is dropping along with it. Like, that's the only thing that's being achieved by the season not ending now. They need it to be over. It's one thing to just lose games. Mm. Like, I think we can all understand a loss, a tough, frustrating loss. But Tottenham are getting dismantled
each
and every game now. And granted, like, it's not lost on me that this stretch has been especially hard with these the teams that they've played. But, like, you're also Tottenham. You're supposed to be one of the four or five best teams in England also. Like, it's supposed to be hard for your opponent, too. Their last four games got killed by Newcastle. 4-0. Watch the highlights. Could have been worse. Trailed Arsenal 3-0 at the half. I know they fought back. That's great. That game was done at halftime. Lost 2-0 to Chelsea last Thursday in a game that also, like the Newcastle game, was not that close.
A resurgent Chelsea, though, Andrew.
Yeah, sure. And then this one, trailed Liverpool 4-0 before they decided to start playing. And, you know, again, the Arsenal game, they came back. The Liverpool game, they made it a little bit interesting. But, like, look at the stretch of games that we're in now. 4-0, 3-0, 2-0, 4-0. Like, they're not in these games until it's too late. Something is wrong here. And, you know, so, Ange. So let's do it maybe for the final time this season until we get into the summer. Because, like I said, the season is basically over for them now. The honeymoon phase of this relationship is over. I think we all know that. The Ange weekly referendum that we've done all throughout this year as this project has kind of been underway.
Okay.
Like I said, I think this is going to be my final referendum because we're not really learning anything new from here on out. They're cooked. They ran a marathon. They got to the 23rd mile. They were really doing well, but they hit the wall and they couldn't go any further. They dropped out of the race. Like, that's where we're at with Tottenham now. They're done. There's nothing new can be learned from these last few games. So I can look at this now and kind of pass some level of judgment. This guy, Ange Postecoglou, has brought great ideas, fun brand of football. Manager of the month, August, September, and October, the first 3 months of the season. He won manager of the month. You know, and the feeling around it at that point was, oh my God, this club has been saved. These dark years are gone, and he came in and became a cult hero. I mean, I'm on Spurs Twitter. Like, I see what the fans are saying. I'm a fan myself, and like it had become the cult of Ange, where a lot of people, I think a lot of fans of the club, had kind of entrenched themselves into that viewpoint, and nothing was going to move them off of it. And like the point was always, you know, as things started to turn, you know, the people who were kind of in that cult of Ange, it's the problem is Levy. The players aren't good enough. Son's not a captain. Injuries disrupted. There was always another thing. And so I kind of want to be like a voice of reason to this and say that, like, you know, we knew before the season that changing styles so dramatically was going to lead to growing pains. They were going to take thumpings. We all needed to understand that. But you can also be worried about what's going on here. There's a few elements of this that are worrying. The team has gotten significantly worse as the season has progressed. That's worrying. You know, in many of these thumpings, the attack has been non-existent. That's worrying. And it's worrying because that wasn't supposed to be the case. The thumpings were supposed to be not because they couldn't generate anything. It was supposed to be because their back line was exposed because they're pushing guys forward. But they were always supposed to be able to generate opportunities. Well, these games, I mean, the Chelsea game, my God, nothing. You know, and then the other part of this is obviously the set piece drama, which Ange has downplayed, which may or may not be how he truly feels. But at this point, his words are all we have to go off of. And everything he tells you right now is that he doesn't think it's the problem that we all seem to be making out to be. So basically, the end of season referendum for me on Ange is that after year one, we don't know. We don't know. And if I were Levy heading into the summer, I'd back him. I would certainly back him in the window. I'd give this every chance to succeed because if it works, it'll be amazing and fun. But I'd also want to hear the plan. This is not a blind backing of the manager. Like, there has to be a willingness to think more progressively about his approach to set pieces. And I'd want to hear something that indicates to me that plan B is more than just doing plan A better, which is kind of what they've said proudly, but I don't see it as such a proud statement anymore. There's a lot of brilliant minds in the English Premier League. And part of the reason that Spurs, I think, have gotten so much worse as the season has progressed, it's not just because of injuries or players who have gotten tired. It's because smart minds are figuring them out. They're understanding how to exploit center backs that have been left alone while fullbacks are all the way upfield and out of position trying to scramble back. They're understanding how to counter against this team. They're understanding that Vicario can't handle corners under the bar. Like, these managers aren't going to just let Tottenham play the way they want to play. Have your principles. That's fine. I'm not saying to compromise that. There's a difference between compromising your principles and showing tactical awareness. And in year one, we didn't really see that kind of tactical awareness. And that's okay, because year one was about learning this new way of playing that ran so counter to what the last two managers here were going to do or wanted to do. But year two has to show growth, not just from the players and not just from incoming transfers, but the manager too. Year one, we don't know. And that's I think, where we land on this.
I just finish on this with Jonathan Wilson, who's addressed a lot of your concerns in his piece in The Guardian today. And he said, 9 sides in the Premier League have conceded fewer goals than Spurs. And that creates concern that Postecoglou has given fans their Tottenham back all too precisely, that the best they can ever be under him is an occasionally thrilling team who are generally good to watch, but too open to ever really challenge for titles. That would be the concern right now. But he said, the improvement from a year ago, though, shouldn't be forgotten. There are caveats, but given the turmoil of last summer, it's only fair to give Postecoglou at least one more window before passing too firm a judgment. The squad still lacks a little depth and is not fully designed for the sort of football he wants to play. I do think that there is too many holdover players and that key signings have to be made this summer. I don't believe his intransigence on set pieces. I just don't. I just think he won't allow the media to overblow this. He keeps slamming them down. There's no way you can watch Tottenham and not think we need to address the set piece thing. But yeah, it's interesting. Tottenham are better. At times they've been thrilling this season. But again, it just goes to show you the standard. You know, the jump from 8th to 5th, it took a lot. The next jump is the big thing, and we'll see if that's something that Ange is capable of making.
And it's worrying too, not just for what they look like, but you know, part of the reason that they were able to make the jump from 8th to 5th wasn't just them. It was that some of the clubs that we thought would be pretty good turned out to be terrible.
Yeah,
but that's it may not have changed early enough for those teams to save their seasons. But if this season were just like a few weeks longer, Newcastle, Chelsea, we'll see what happens with United. But like, these teams would pass them, and they still very well may. Tottenham, this position of like, oh well, the fallback will at least be Europa League. That's in question now. Like, that's not definite. They got to earn it.
There's the potential in their next season for to be a few more sharks in the tank.
Absolutely.
And if, say, Villa maintain or get close to maintaining what they were this season, next season, Newcastle will be better, I think. Chelsea will be better, I think.
Look how good Chelsea. I saw the table from January 1st to today. Chelsea are 4th.
Mm.
Like, it's... Again, it is clicking.
No, I mean, God, we've gone over their stats and again, there are other off the field issues that may impact that. But look, so I don't know. It's the thing about a league season is it's so easy to forget how good it started for Tottenham and how good and enjoyable Ange Ball was and what a refreshing palate cleanser it was for Tottenham fans and the Tottenham fans who believe there is a Tottenham way to play and who subscribe to that belief. The problem with a league season is when you finish so. I mean, the commentator said yesterday, Spurs' worst run of league form in 20 years.
Right.
And
Man City still to come.
You don't want to carry that into the summer.
No. Although maybe it's better to end poorly than finish well, because maybe there's a further motivating factor in the summer to get better. Listen, we're not where we thought we were. And that feeling kind of sits with you during the next few months.
Levy and Ange are going to be busy this summer.
Yes.
And whoever else is involved.
Yeah. Be it officially or unofficially.
Whatever. Some guy typing a laptop who... Yeah, he's just sending emails, man. He's not on site, but he's sending emails.
FP is who you're referring to.
Yeah. FP.
Yeah. So there you go. That's Tottenham. That's the title race, all that stuff. We'll go ahead. We'll take a break. I should say before we go to break here, I want to remind everybody that the Design a Shirt program is done. We are accepting no more submissions. Here's what I'll say about the program. The response was actually, it was actually too good.
Yeah.
So we're going to pick one of these, hopefully by the end of this week. We have to still
I thought we'd have it done by now, but you decided to get drunk over the weekend.
Well, yeah. Oh, and you were sober. You're going to sit here right now and tell me that you weren't drunk. But at any rate, but we also have to talk with the shirt designer, like the guy, the company we use to make these shirts, and see what they can do and can't do and all that
Everything's
stuff.
Everything's possible, Andrew. Don't limit yourself, man.
But I'll say this. The response being what it was, we're going to pick one, but that does not mean that more of these shirt ideas won't also end up on a t-shirt at some point. There were enough that I thought were that good that I would not be limited. Like, we'll do one right now, but that doesn't mean that a lot of these other ones. You guys had a lot of good ideas. I appreciate it. I appreciate it very much. So
we're going to go international after the break, Andrew, I feel.
We're going to take a break. We'll come back. Few title winners that we want to say congratulations to. We're going to do only nice things, a little bit of MLS, a little bit of Man United. Still a lot to do here on Caught Offside, so don't go anywhere.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Oh, back now on Caught Offside. JJ, one other note from this little birthday thing the other night. It was, like I said, it was so much fun. But the one of the big parts of a birthday is you get a cake. And my wife, she brought out a cake. It was so nice. And as she is showing it, she's holding it to show it to everybody, and she dropped the entire thing on the ground. It was are you pranking me? Like, is the real cake now going to come out? And this was all just no. That's what happened. She dropped the whole cake on the ground.
And it was quickly rescued by your friend and turned over, and everyone was like, oh, I'm not going to eat that. But I did.
But you did.
Because I felt bad for her. So I was like, it's still good. It's still good. You know, it's the icing.
We were at a brewery.
Yeah.
It was on the floor of a brewery.
Yeah. General Schwarzkopf's Beer Emporium.
You're right, though. I think that once the top layer is removed, I think the rest of the cake is fine. It's more the optics that, like,
tasted good.
Like, nothing bad will happen to you from eating that. You won't, like... No. It's just the optics of, oh my God, look at this animal.
Yeah,
nothing exactly will stop him from eating cake.
I mean, I don't care what your friends think of me anyway. Like, I'm sure they have very dim views of the Irish. Huh?
No, not based on a lot of the conversation you had with my buddy Murph.
No, Murph was great. Yeah, no, I just ate it. And I mean, you know, it no longer said happy birthday, Andrew. It was happy Andrea. But it's fine.
Yeah. But it was a fun time. Let's see, a couple of congratulations to throw out there. Congrats to Real Madrid.
Your second team?
No, I don't have a. I don't really have a second team.
Oh my
right?
god!
I enjoy watching
the boner
them play.
You have.
That's no. I enjoy watching them. By the way, I don't even know if I'm rooting for them in the Champions League right now. I kind of want to see Kane and Dyer do it.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, you're.
So
maybe
they're not my second team.
The shadow of your boner for Harry Kane probably is bigger than that. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess if we're ranking. The veracity of different erections that a person can have, then I don't know where it ranks, but
you do love Real Madrid.
I love watching them play. They go out and they do it. No surprise. They're crowned champions of La Liga over the weekend, thanks to their 3-0 win and Girona beating Barcelona. That was really what sealed it, quite literally. Good for them. Like, remember how this all started, losing Benzema and then, like, okay, they can cope with that. They had some time to come to terms with that. But then, bang, like catastrophic injuries to Alaba, Militao, Courtois. It was Bellingham, his emergence, basically being like, no, I got this. Like, it's
I'll
all right.
I'll score all the goals.
Yeah. And, like, he was able to kind of hold, stem the tide. Vinicius got hurt. And finally, Vinicius came back and sort of refound his form. And then there was really, at that point, Barcelona faded a little. Girona, after Real Madrid killed them, they faded and there was no looking back. And so Vinicius, Bellingham, guys like that will get the headlines. But I will say there were a lot of, these aren't glue guys. These are global superstars, but kind of glue guy-ish. Like Toni Kroos, we've talked about this season that he had where he was spectacular. How about Antonio Rudiger? Like, not a whole lot of stability in the back line with some of those injuries, but he was amazing week after week. And then with this win, JJ, Luka Modric and Nacho, they have now won 25 trophies at Real Madrid, which equals the record held by two guys. Recent.
Ronaldo.
No.
Well, no, he wouldn't have 25 trophies.
At Real Madrid. Benzema and Marcelo.
Oh, okay. Oh, Marcelo, yeah. The great survivor.
Based on what happens, I mean, Real Madrid could add to that less than a month from now. We'll have to see. So yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is ultimately, like, they just won this title, but my American brain, like, it's so hard for me to wrap my mind around the fact you just won a championship. They just won a major title.
Yeah.
But, like, you can't really celebrate it. I mean, their season is it going to be judged off of this, or is it going to be judged by what they do in the Champions League? They kind of hold themselves to that standard. So you can't. There's no celebrating this. They got a huge game on Wednesday, and like they can't lose any focus after just having won a title.
That's the lore of their club, Andrew.
Yeah. So yeah, props to them. And then also winning a title over the weekend, PSV Eindhoven. They clinched the Dutch Eredivisie. Also felt like a long time coming. They had an unbelievable season. They beat Sparta Rotterdam 4-2. So Feyenoord can no longer mathematically catch PSV. It ends a 6-year title drought for PSV. It's their 25th league title. Wow. Huge number. They've lost one game this season in the league. If you can tell me right now the one team that beat them, I'll give you a dime.
One team that beat them?
Yeah, their only loss this season.
Let me think. It can't have been a big team.
No, it's not.
It's like a small side. Was it Utrecht?
No. Nijmegen.
I would never.
3-1 on March 30th.
Never.
Also,
Sergiño Dest did some kind of a photo shoot with himself on crutches and like a screen behind him and like those lights that you have, film lights. And I think he just titled it Comeback. So I think he may be making a movie about his comeback.
Well, then, look,
one of our listeners just goes, if I had a teenth of the confidence this guy has.
Oh, seriously. Oh, man, I would love that, even for a day.
You need that.
I know. But it should be said that this was a good thing for some American players that this happened. Malik Tillman had a fantastic season. Sergiño Dest had a great season when he really needed one after some tough stretches with clubs. It was hard for him to find a team. Even though, like you said, he missed this with the torn ACL. Ricardo Pepi, I mean, he kind of took to that super sub role. 7 goals and 2 assists. He started one game this season. 7 goals, 2 assists in one. He started once. So good for him. And it shouldn't be forgotten, too, who assembled a lot of this. Not all of it. I mean, he hasn't been there very long, just really the one season. But Ernie Stewart, who left his job with the U.S. and then took on this role with PSV as their director. He appointed the manager, Peter Boss. He brought that American contingent, which comes with its own set of risks. When an American is the one overseeing that, just ask Jesse Marsh how that played at Leeds. And remember, like, they lost Javi Simons, who is off starring at Leipzig now. Stewart had to help make up for that loss. You know, Chucky Lozano coming in.
I'm watching the celebrations here. It's pretty cool.
By the way, I should say, like, I saw people saying Ernie Stewart, like, with an embarrassing dance or whatever. There's nothing embarrassing about that. He can flat out dance. I was impressed. I was impressed by it. But yeah, it's not. I mean, look, Luke de Jong, 27 goals, 15 assists. What a season. Johan Bakayoko, what a fun player. 21 goal involvements, young player. Even then, like, the veteran presence in the back with a Patrick Van Aanholt. So good for PSV Eindhoven. Good for all the Americans involved. We all celebrate it together. JJ, should we say some nice things now?
Oh, utterly deranged nice things, but yes.
Snowdrops and daffodils, butterflies and bees, sailboats and fishermen,
things and nice things,
wishing well.
God, that jingle.
I look forward to that being stuck in my head for the rest of the week.
Daisies and daffodils. Dana somehow has been reinvented on a soccer podcast.
I love her. Let's see. I'll start here. We'll rotate, I guess. I have two. You have two. I'm going to start, JJ. I'm going to say some only nice things about a guy that not a lot of nice things have been said about of late. David Moyes. So we've suspected it for quite a while now. It appears Moyes will be going at the end of the season. He's going to leave West Ham. Barring something unforeseen, Julian Lopetegui is going to be returning to the Premier League. He'll be managing West Ham next season. That news has kind of all come out over the last day or so. It's been easy to bash Moyes as West Ham have really started to slide. What that performance against Chelsea was, it was embarrassing. I mean, we'll call it what it is. But I'm going to take this moment to send him on his way by saying only nice things. This guy presided over a truly exemplary era of West Ham when it very easily could have gone a different way. It was not supposed to be what it's been. In his first stint, he inherited a team in mid-November that was in the relegation zone. And on just a 6-month contract, he stabilized them, got them to 13th, 9 points above the drop. They had some fun along the way, scored the 8th most goals in the league that year. And then, okay, well, thank you, David. And you've done your job. You're free to go now. So they send him on his way. It doesn't get better. So in a little bit of history repeating, at the end of December in 2019, Manuel Pellegrini had him in 17th. They were basically in the relegation zone. They were 1 point above, but basically relegation candidates. So let's go back to the well, see if Moise can stabilize him again. And he does way more than just that. That season, he does his job, keeps them up, strong finish. They saw, they won 3, drew 3, lost just once over their last 7 games. He keeps them up. Then what does he do? Comes back the next year, finishes 6th, ahead of London rivals Tottenham and Arsenal, a team that was just in the relegation zone, basically, when he inherited them a year before. Follows that up the next year, 7th place finish. So he goes and does it again in the league, proves it was no fluke, takes them all the way to the semifinals of the Europa League, where they narrowly lose by a goal to Eintracht Frankfurt. The next year, they fall back, lower mid-table, but he leads them on a European ride that ends with a trophy in the Conference League. They beat Fiorentina 2-1, West Ham's first trophy in 43 years. Moyes! And then in this, his final year with the club, in the face of constant questioning about his job, he loses his best player in the transfer window in Declan Rice, and he's got them above clubs like Newcastle and Chelsea for significant stretches of the season. Now, only eventually he's been caught. The natural order of things have kind of taken hold, but they're still 9th. And, I saw this, JJ. Alan Pardew was talking about it, about Moyes the other day, and he said that the club, West Ham, have basically undermined and disrespected their manager all throughout. And he's kind of right. Like Moyes, he was brought in to simply avoid relegation, and look how much more he's gotten out of them.
I agree.
And amidst all that, as they've continued to overachieve, even in this season, the board were basically accepting job applications openly to replace him all throughout. He did. He had his authority kind of ripped out from under him, and it shouldn't be shocking that a run of bad results have followed. So I don't know where this guy's going to manage next. I don't know if it'll be a success, but I do know that this week is likely going to be his last game at the London Stadium as manager of West Ham. And coming off a battering by Chelsea, the instinct for a lot of fans is probably going to be to boo him. And I'm saying that would be a mistake. And something that if you do it, you'll likely feel dumb about it later, because this guy has brought success to the club. He's raised the bar in a way that nobody expected. He got you a trophy and a parade. So whatever you think of how this season has ended, West Ham fans, that's fine. Try to put that aside and try to understand that in the face of expectations that this was never going to happen, think of what this guy has done over the last few seasons for your club. And at the very least, send him out the right way. Applaud him, whatever, have a banner, something. Because it's been a fun few years for a club that looked like they might have been heading for the championship when he took them over.
I couldn't agree more with what you've said there. And if anyone boos, they're read the room. It's just totally inappropriate what he's done. I have only nice things to say about an American owner.
Oh my God.
I know.
Todd Boehly?
No, not Todd Boehly. Come on, Andrew. Try again. Another American owner. I don't even have nice things to say about FSG. So
Ryan Reynolds.
No, Kyle J. Kraus, owner of Parma. Parma, who've been through just the absolute ringer the last, 10, 15 years. Well, they got promoted last Wednesday with a 1-1 draw with Bari. So that Parma are coming back to Serie A, and it's pretty great. And Kyle Kraus has done a brilliant job in kind of reinventing a club that constantly has needed to reinvent itself. It's been relegated before. It's been almost bankrupt. It had to sell some of its trophies just to keep things going. And now, Andrew, as David Farini writes in Forbes, we've got Serie America somewhat. Kraus will become the sixth US-based owner of a Serie A club alongside Stephen Pagliuca, Atalanta, Redbird Capital Partners, Milan, Rocco Commisso, Brooklyn Boy, Fiorentina, 777 Partners, Genoa.
Well, I thought we were only saying nice things here.
We'll get to them. And Dan Friedkin at Roma. The tally could rise if Duncan Niedrauer's Venezia FC can clinch promotion by finishing in the top two spots in Serie B or via the playoff pathway. So really, this is fantastic, but it kind of makes you wonder, well, why, you know, Parma? What about Parma? So what? It's just a random small Italian club that struggled. If you're saying that, then you're really not tapping into just the cultural icons they became. I'm going to list some of their players from their iconic mid-90s sides. Just, here's a flavor. Faustino Espria, Dino Baggio, okay, Fabio Cannavaro, Gianluigi Buffon, Enrico Chiesa, Hernan Crespo, Juan Sebastian Varane, Lilian Thuram, Gianfranco Zola. And I know I'm missing some. That's just some off the top of my head that I wrote down.
Italian Southampton.
No, they were really good in their own right. I mean,
I'm kidding.
Arsenal in 94, that was a robbery. A robbery that Arsenal won that Cup Winners' Cup final. I mean, it's an iconic goal by Alan Smith, but that team was so damn talented. And the club just, it kind of went into the, from like the mid-2000s on, went into this spin cycle of just, I mean, it's technically not the same club. You know, I think they're called Parma 1913. You know, So they've had to change and reinvent. But well done to Kyle Kraus and everybody at Parma. Only nice things, Andrew.
There you go. One other club I want to say only nice things about, JJ, the Colorado Rapids. So on this show, in our MLS season preview, we had anointed Colorado as one of the teams most likely to take a big leap from last season to this season. And then they got off to that rough start, that opening 4-1 thrashing that Portland handed them. They lost to Houston, couldn't beat the Sounders, despite, which is not embarrassing, but the Sounders also were red carded in the 58th minute, and it still took a late goal from Colorado just to get a draw there. What's wrong? Maybe they're not that good. You're all idiots for thinking they were going to take a leap. It's still the Rapids. Well, hold on, because in their last six games, here we go. They've won four, drawn one, lost one. And by the way, the loss was on the road against last year's Supporter Shield winners, FC Cincinnati, 2-1. I don't know, when you start to look at this season now, they've beaten LAFC, they've beaten Real Salt Lake, who were top of the West. They went across the country, they drew with Inter Miami, and this past weekend went across the country again, got a win against NYCFC at Citi Field, that one. And Tom Bogert, he's of like mind here, JJ. He posted this over the weekend. He keeps receipts, this guy. He definitely does. I like that about him. He said, "Hey, do you remember when I said the Colorado Rapids had an awesome offseason and they were going to be good this year, but then people immediately gave up because the Rapids had one bad half to start the season? Because I remember, and well, yeah, guess what? The Rapids are indeed good." I love Tom. He does not suffer fools, which is why I'm surprised
Much abuse on Twitter, you know?
But it's funny because when you look at the mentions, it was the abuse he got was basically from Rapids fans. Who were like, "See, we knew we were going to suck." They hate themselves. I get it. They've had a lot of bad seasons, and so maybe they need to see it to believe it. But maybe it took some of us outside of the bubble to let them know, no, you guys are actually going to be good. One of the things with this league that sometimes we forget about is that players coming into MLS, it just does not always start smoothly. Like sometimes for whatever reason, I don't know if it's the travel, heat, time of year they're playing. I don't know.
New country.
So yeah, a lot of reasons, but sometimes that just happens. And you look at somebody like Rafa Navarro, who came over midseason from Palmeiras last year in Brazil. He started 10 games when he got to Colorado. He scored one goal. Through 11 starts this season, he's already up to 5. Some guys, it just takes him a year, and maybe he's one of those. Cole Bassett, another player, young American, 7 goal involvements last year in 25 appearances. This year he's already up to 6 goal involvements in 11 appearances. He had a goal and an assist over the weekend. He was great. Kalen Carr pointed this out at MLSsoccer.com. Colorado have already equaled their win total of 5 from last season, and the calendar just turned over to May. So we said, biggest leap forward. We think it's going to be Colorado. I think we are on our way to a correct prediction.
I'm going to finish with only nice things for smoking, Andrew. Specifically, you don't hear a lot of good things about smoking, but this is a segue into talking about a smoking manager, a great manager who's synonymous with smoking in the dugout. Cesar Menotti died over the weekend at the age of 85. Iconic Argentinian manager that led them to their first ever World Cup trophy in 1978, 3-1 victory against the Netherlands in Estadio Monumental in Buenos Aires. We all remember the pitch strewn with the ticker tape. And it was weird because how do you curb your joy in that amazing moment that you've just won the World Cup, but realizing that in winning the World Cup, you've kind of also reflected kindly in a way that you did not intend to on the brutal military junta that was running the country at the time.
Yeah.
And imagine being kind of an intellectual, somebody who was definitely not of the right, and having to encourage your players that, you're winning this for yourselves and your family and for the country, but not the government, not those people. He was also the manager that, cleverly or he had the foresight to look at Diego Maradona, and despite the clamor for him to be included in 1978, to go against that and say, no, he's not ready, don't bring him, he's too young, he's only 18, don't do it. And still, you know, went on and won the World Cup. He was, you know, he was seen as like a kind of a philosopher, an intellectual, someone who would talk about the game in a kind of a higher state of mind. He said in the Guardian obituary, it said that he described football, a football team, as an idea, which is kind of just in, you know, a conceptual way of looking at the game. And so, yeah, he passed away at the age of 85. Now, does that mean we should all take up smoking? No, it doesn't. But he had a long and very interesting life in football. And, yep, so Cesar Luis Menotti passed away at the weekend.
Oh, there you go. There you go. He took an interesting route into that. He really grabbed the smoking angle.
Well, I kind of, because it's only nice things about smoking managers, and we usually would say, don't, no, you can't do that. I still remember when there'd be games in Europe, and you'd see this guy on the sideline for the whatever Spanish or French team, and he'd be lighting up a cigarette.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was the same in baseball too, right?
Manager, I mean, Red Auerbach is the guy who's always associated with lighting up a cigar after, when Boston, when like he knew the Celtics had it won. Right there on the bench.
Okay.
So, yeah. Yeah. Oh, there you go.
Nice things remind me of you.
Only nice things. Daisies and daffodils. All those beautiful things. Let's close out now, JJ. A couple things before we get out of here on this Monday. Lionel Messi, spectacular performance, 6-2 win against the Red Bulls. It's interesting. Oh. I mean, it actually started okay for New York. Like, Forsberg had that nice run, played in a great ball. It was 1-0 at the half, Red Bulls.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't. Messi, a goal and 5 assists, all in the second half.
Now, one of those assists.
Well, the first one. Yeah.
To Rojas, that shouldn't count.
No, because it's like
he's blasted it in from 35 yards. He's just it's like a 5-yard pass.
But you know what? They all count the same.
The second one to Rojas is the thing of beauty.
Yeah,
the rest of them are fine, but the second one is the real absolute skill, where he's surrounded by three Red Bull players, slide rule pass. I mean.
That one is fantastic. It was the best of the bunch. Although I did like his first one to Suarez, where he holds up play, and then it's just like patience, waiting for Suarez to get back on side, and then like through two bodies, kind of, he just zings one right at him, and he knows Suarez has the ability to volley that in.
There's times, though, when you watch the highlights, and you see Messi on the ball, and you're like, is this super slow motion? Andrew, he is walking through them. That game again was another one, and I'm surprised because I didn't think I'd get it from the Red Bulls. That was another one of those games watching Messi and watching Suarez where I was feeling like this isn't real football. Something seems wrong. The other team appears to be struck by some kind of like debilitating disease where they can't like run or. Just all
they might just be so afraid of him, they don't know how to defend him. I mean
it might be, but it looks terrible. They look terrible. Oh. All awful.
Suarez, by the way, hat trick. 10 goals, 5 assists now in 11 appearances this season.
Have you noticed he has to be helped off the ground every time he goes down? Like, he's just like, it's, I don't
they're,
know.
They're first in the East. You know, I'm not saying there are voices out there that are either rooting against this for the super team nature or whatever, skeptical of it. I don't know. But it doesn't, you know, like it doesn't always go this way. Gerrard at the Galaxy, Lampard at NYCFC, which was kind of injury induced.
Well,
but still.
I really do think that Messi's in better shape than those guys were when they landed. Lampard couldn't stay fit, and Gerrard didn't want to be there, really. Gerrard made a decision in haste that he regrets to this day, because he thought, I would have loved just to hang on and get one half season. What if you'd signed the contract that Brendan Rodgers put in front of you and accepted a reduced role, you would have got that half season under Klopp or more, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. But the expectations were extraordinary, and they, and Messi specifically, they're doing it. Suarez, too. I mean, they're leading the supporter shield race right now. They're fun to watch. So, and people are skeptical. You want to say the league doesn't know how to handle them, whatever. I'm just going to enjoy this. Like, you're getting the Messi experience right now in our own league. Like, this is it. Like,
it's ritual humiliation. It's
Messi and Suarez are tied for the golden boot. A lot of people are paying a lot of money to watch this. And I mean, you're kind of getting your money's worth, which was going to be a hard thing to achieve, but they're doing it.
The guy who walks during playing and the guy who said he didn't think he could continue because of all the painkillers he has to take are leading the league in goals.
They've been spectacular. To close out, I just wanted to mention Manchester United. They play Crystal Palace today. But there's been a few pieces of news involving United over the past couple of days that I found interesting. One, they're expressing an interest in bringing Jadon Sancho back. Shouldn't be surprising. I mean, he's playing well. He had an unbelievable game in the first leg of the Champions League semifinals. So they sent a delegation to try and talk with him about a return to United. John Murtaugh and Matt Hargreaves were sent to Dortmund to speak with him. So I don't know how this is going to play out. But I can't help but think that a meeting like that, there's a scene from this movie, Wet Hot American Summer, which I love. Anybody that's ever gone to sleepaway camp, I think it's a must-see movie. Okay. But there's a scene of this woman and, you know, she's being counseled because her boyfriend has been terrible to her and she's ready to move on. And then he appears at the end of the movie and he tries to get her back. Here's that scene.
Gail.
Ron, what are you doing here?
Gail, I've been thinking about you a lot and I want you back.
I love you, but I'm just sick and tired of being sick and tired, you know? And if you can't handle that, Ron, well then to hell with you!
You'll come back to me, Gail. I know you will.
I don't think so, Ronald von Kleinenstein. I really don't think so.
That's how I see. Gail is Sancho and Ronald von Kleinenstein is Manchester United. And I think Sancho or Gail would make the right decision to say, nah, I'm not taking you back.
I'm going to explore my options.
Yeah. Yeah. Ronald von Kleinenstein. Have you ever seen that movie, JJ?
I haven't. And now that you've said it, I desperately want to see it.
It's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous movie, but I find that kind of humor hilarious. Okay. Like it's very like stupid humor, but I think it's like, I don't know. I love it. I think you wouldn't, I could see you liking it too, even if you've never gone.
I'll watch it this week.
Okay. A couple other United things. So Erik ten Hag, I always say that sometimes when a manager's time is perhaps winding down, although it seems like he's been backed, but when a manager's time is potentially winding down, he starts to give job interviews through his press conferences. Ten Hag is kind of starting to do that now. Ten Hag on Man United injuries. We've played 47 games and we had 30 combinations in the back four. They weren't from choices you make. They were forced choices because of players injured. Anyone with even a little bit of knowledge about football knows it will have a huge impact. It's that last line where you start to think, oh, this is a man
he's getting testy.
Yeah. And then on top of that, Erik ten Hag and Jose Mourinho with a little bit of going at it sort of through the media. So I'm reading here from Rob Dawson. Mourinho suggested that ten Hag has been given more backing in the transfer market than he had during his 2.5 years at Old Trafford.
Is that true?
However, ten Hag hit back by claiming that Mourinho is the only manager in the post Sir Alex Ferguson era to, quote, get the players they wanted. Apart from Mourinho, the manager didn't get the players they wanted, and that's what you need, Ten Hag said in an interview with ESPN Brazil. I think both of these guys
Mourinho
are
get
wrong.
Pogba and Lukaku in one summer.
Yeah, but like Ten Hag has also, it's wrong of him to say that Mourinho was the only one that got, I mean, Antony and Lissandro Martinez, like Ten Hag's gotten his guys too. They both kind of did. I don't know. I think they're both kind of wrong. In this situation. But I'm here for it. I'm here for whatever their argument is. Ultimately, Ten Hag, we'll see how this all ends, but like he's a human inkblot. Like he more than any other manager in this league, you can look at him and kind of see what you want to see. And I feel like everyone is kind of right.
Except a established pattern of play.
But like his shortcomings are all well documented, like you just said, patterns of play. They have, God knows, they should have probably lost a lot more games than they did this year. Even,
I mean, it could have been way worse.
Yeah, but then you see tweets like this, and granted, it comes from at Ten Hag era. Gee, I wonder who this guy is going to defend. But he tweeted this: defeats in 2024 in all competitions. Ten Hag with 3 defeats. Klopp 4, Arteta 4, Unai Emery 8, Ange Postecoglou 8.
Yeah. I get, yeah. But again, you know.
Human inkblot.
You're right. You're right. And he got a trophy in his first season.
Sure did. He sure did. JJ, that's about all I got. Do you want to do a quick Champions League semifinal prediction?
Quickly. So we're into the second legs now. Finally poised. I know Dortmund leading the first leg, but you know, you just see PSG aren't not scoring in Paris. I have a worry that they will overwhelm Dortmund, not batter them, but that they will go through. And Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, I'm kind of like you. I'm rooting for the chaos of Tommy Trophies getting back to another Champions League final in a club where he is steadily just fire torching everything in sight, rowing with executives, about to get kicked out, but he's going to deliver them a Champions League. So as much as I want Bayern, oh, you know what, for the fun of it, Bayern Munich go through.
Wow. I agree with you on PSG. I disagree. I think Real Madrid will see it through at the Bernabeu.
Probably.
Which would lead us to a PSG Real Madrid final where I say, let's really make it interesting. Winner gets Mbappe. Let's have that be the trophy at the end of the game.
Mbappe hoisting the Champions League while also a tear running down one cheek.
Or if PSG win, it's Marquinhos. He will actually hoist Mbappe. That is what they will throw up into the air.
Winner gets Mbappe.
Yeah.
Loser gets Eric Choupo-Moting. I don't even know where he is, but you have to have him.
There you go. What a show. What a finely poised show that was. I enjoyed it immensely. You got anything else, my friend?
No, I'm done, man.
I am as well. Hey, we'll be back later this week with a full recap of the Champions League semifinals. I can't wait for both of those. JJ, to you I say...
Check you later, fun boy.
See ya.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.